Welcome to The Breach, your deep dive into authoritarianism and corruption in the era of Trump. I'm your host, Lindsay Beierstein. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. It really helps inform new people about these critical issues. Consider it an act of resistance. My guest today is award-winning journalist Brooke Binkowski, managing editor of the storied critical thinking promotion and urban legend debunking site, Snopes.com. Brooke's here to talk to us today about fake news in the era of Trump, both actual fake news like you might get from your unfriendly local Russian bot, and false allegations of fake news such as you find at a Trump rally. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Fake news has become Donald Trump's catchphrase, but he didn't coin that term, did he?
No, not at all. It's been floating around for some time, although it's kind of been weaponized in the past several months.
It's weird because just before the election, fake news was kind of a mainstream reality-based community kind of buzzword. We were complaining about things like Pizzagate, and then somehow we've made this huge leap to it being Donald Trump's calling card. How did that happen?
Yeah. It just came with the territory, I think. You know, when you're extremely thin-skinned and you don't really dabble in the business of truth, you end up calling everything fake news. And so I think that this is kind of a way to fling poo and fling mud at people, cloud the issues, muddy the waters, and just kind of confuse everything so that nobody really knows what's going on.
Can you give us a 30,000-foot overview of the fake news landscape?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to look at it is that this is propaganda. This is exactly how propaganda gains a foothold and how it works and its pattern. If you study the patterns of how propaganda is used and weaponized, it starts out with flooding techniques so that people have so much going on that they're confused all the time. They're emotionally overwrought. They don't know what's real and what's not. And finally, they're just reacting to whatever they hear. I mean, to me, it just sounds like it should all be called propaganda at this point, or disinformation. Take your pick.
It's such a complicated ecosystem, though, because you've got things like sort of obvious fakeries. You got the conspiratorial blogosphere, you know, Alex Jones and InfoWars and that kind of stuff. You got the Russian bots. How does this all fit together into one incoherent whole?
I don't think it does. I think incoherence is one of the end goals here. You know, they talk about chaos agents. When you read intel stuff, there's always something talking about chaos agents to sort of throw these wrenches of uncertainty into any one narrative. And I think that the incoherence is part of this message.
Can you talk a little bit more about what role, if any, Russia might be having in the rise of fake news?
Yeah. So Russia has been extremely good since at least the 1960s at weaponizing disinformation and misinformation. And they employ it with a lot of precision and a lot of expertise behind it. And with the advent of modern technology and big data, it's become that much easier to weaponize disinformation. And when I say disinfo, I mean something truthful with a lie mixed in that makes the lie that much more powerful. And that is a key force within propaganda. So Russia's been doing this, like I said, for some time. And it's been kind of pointing these, you know, disinformation cannons all over the place, including at the United States for many years. But it's never really been that effective until now. And I think that the key difference is that the American press has been basically cut off at the knees. You know, there's the newsrooms that I used to work in that had 50 people now have 5 people. And there's only so much you can do. And when you create this sort of informational vacuum, misinformation always comes in to fill the void, or disinformation, or outright propaganda. So I think that they're doing what they always do, and it's caught on this time around. And I think it's being aided and abetted by a lot of unscrupulous people who stand to personally benefit within the United States. And as somebody who's now been on the receiving end of a lot of this stuff, I can tell you that it is extremely overwhelming and uncomfortable, but also it can't last. It's doomed to fail. It's the sort of thing that always rocks the boat in the short term and creates enormous problems that then the more sober people afterwards have to clean up for years afterwards.
Why do you think it's doomed to fail? I mean, it seems like it could be tipping our society into a kind of closed authoritarian type structure where disinformation is simply the norm.
It does seem that way. And that's actually, I think, part of the propaganda process. Although I have to confess that at the moment, seeing a way out is really hard. But if you look at authoritarian regimes, they never really last. They're usually inherently, well, not usually, they're always inherently unstable because they're authoritarian regimes. So they can't usually last. They don't have staying power. And I think that the world is now progressing beyond time in which authoritarian regimes can actually really work long term. I mean, you can't really stop the free flow of information. You can't stop people from knowing, at least not in the United States, from knowing what's going on in the world around them for very long. I mean, the truth always comes out. Now, I understand that this sounds contradictory because you have authoritarian regimes like North Korea, but I have to point out that North Korea manages by virtue of being a relatively very small country with a small population, and they have effectively cut off information coming into the country as well as information going out of the country. And so that's why it's sustained itself for as long as it has. But even that is an inherently unstable regime.
It's kind of the tribute that Vice pays to virtue, fake news, because they're conceding in a way that we can't stop the flow of information. So the best they can do is to pollute the stream so that nothing is worth anything informationally. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. And that says a lot to me about the power of media that's strong and vibrant and the power of journalism that has all of what it needs in order to practice journalism. It's an extremely powerful force for democracy and for personal freedom. And so that's another reason I'm predicting that it can't last.
It's heartening that the people who are most optimistic about North Korea say that really the biggest force to destabilize the regime is things coming in on SIM cards, even Disney movies and South Korean soap operas.
Wow. I have not heard that, but I'm not surprised at all. That's really... it's almost sad in a way that Disney movies and things like that are what could inherently destabilize an authoritarian regime, but there you go.
And just models of the market are, John Oliver had a great bit on this in Last Week Tonight, which we can link to in the show notes, where he talks about how North Koreans are fascinated by things like crime dramas where people are read their rights. It's like, what are rights and where might it be the norm and the law that we get them?
My goodness. Yeah, that's really... So I will say this, though. I kind of caution against believing too much about North Korea as well, besides what they put out there, because I don't know how much of what comes out of North Korea is disinformation as well. So the kind of intelligence you see around North Korea and the stories you see about North Korea is... I just want to caution people to... take that with as much of a grain of salt, because they could also be very carefully pruning their image in the world and geopolitically.
For sure. And then they've got dissident testimonies where people have not only an axe to grind, but they're often several years behind the times. And it's just a perfect storm of confusion and disinformation.
Exactly. And it's very difficult to maneuver. And again, this is why I think that, you know, a free press should be nurtured and given the resources that it needs to practice. And I mean that throughout the entire world, you know, not just in the United States.
There's been a proliferation of fact checkers of various kinds since the election, but Snopes goes way back. And one thing that I think is really interesting is your emphasis on techniques for analyzing folklore as a lens in which to view fake news and disinformation. Can you talk about how that informs your analysis?
Absolutely. So on the most basic level, it is a tool for analyzing folklore and how it spreads and kind of how humans have always told themselves and each other stories in order to make sense of the world around us. I mean, even journalism, as much as, you know, there's this sort of championing of facts and, you know, here's how it went, there's the drive for a narrative. There's a drive for a story. Like, what happened and why? How do we learn? What do we learn from this? And I think that applying that kind of folklore-esque lens to the fake news that comes out to look for the final message that is being communicated either discreetly in stories or in the aggregate is an important thing to watch. And that's really helped me see the kind of higher patterns that have emerged with this sort of fire hose of fake news.
It's interesting how fake news has come to serve many of the functions of so-called urban legends in terms of giving people an avenue to broadcast their prejudices while seeming fact-based. So a person who wouldn't tell a racist joke or a classist joke on their Facebook wall might share a piece of fake news about a woman shoving a chicken into her vagina that makes the same classist commentary, but can at least be couched in some semblance of veracity.
Yeah, and that's what makes it exactly that powerful, because then people can use it to justify their own otherwise baseless biases and racism and classism. You know, they can say, oh, well, I always knew those people were doing that. And I saw that kind of fake news pick up last year around April or May. It started to get really strong back then. And what they do is they recycle the people writing this for whether it's out of ignorance or whether it's deliberate. You know, and part of sort of an overarching effort, the effects are still the same. What it's doing is allowing people to say what was unsayable before. And I do think that there has been a coordinated effort to exploit these sort of particular cracks in American society.
How have fake news companies weaponized our inherent confirmation bias?
Well, what they do is they take these old stories, these old urban legends, and stories that have circulated for years that are, you know, sort of funny criminal stories or stories about stupid people or, you know, things that are completely made up and were always completely made up. They were the kinds of things that school kids passed around. I actually know this because some of these stories I passed around myself as a kid, you know, like, oh, did you hear this story about the woman with a chicken in her vagina kind of
thing? The man who goes to a prostitute, but it's his own daughter?
Oh, God, I'm so sick of that one. That keeps, like, recurring like malaria. It's incredible. And, yeah, so they'll show that same story over and over, which would be just an amusing story, except that there's this subtle emphasis of the person doing it being, you know, lower class or being not white. That one has been hit really hard, actually. The sort of racist tropes within fake news, I think, is going to be the subject of a lot of academic papers in the future. And that, I think, is how it has especially been weaponized, because you see enough of these stories and they're being targeted to you and kind of served up to you on social media. And after a while, even if you're not thinking about it at all consciously, if you have any subconscious prejudices, they're just going to get reaffirmed and strengthened by this constant, you know, attack of, look at those people. Look what those people think. Look what those people are saying. Aren't they stupid? Aren't they dumb? You know, that kind of thing.
And it's fracturing a winning Democratic coalition to be fomenting these kinds of suspicions of our neighbors and criminals and non-white people and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Democrats, they're not really doing much to help themselves either. I've seen their latest message, which is to kind of, you know, get on Trump for not building the border wall when he said he was going to. And I admit, I've been doing immigration news for more than 10 years at this point, so I am biased towards this type of news. But, you know, they are fracturing themselves by not staying on their own message. You know, are they the party of human rights? Are they the party of that protects undocumented people? Are they the party that doesn't want a wall? Are they the party that does? You know, there's this divergence in messaging on the Democrat side of things that is not helping the overall sense of unity of the nation. I'm not trying to pick on them in particular. I think Republicans are doing a great job disintegrating the political structure as well. But I really have to say that falling for this kind of thing is not going to help.
Steve Bannon has recently left his perch as a strategic advisor at the White House to return to Breitbart News to wage some kind of as yet undefined war against the enemies of his brand of populism. How do you think that's going to affect the fake news landscape?
Oh, I think it's just going to add to an already weaponized and overwhelming fake news landscape. I mean, how much more overwhelm can you add, right? I think that he's going to do what he always does and take out his personal sort of rage on people using Breitbart as a platform. I mean, that's what he's been doing for years. And I think with the help of, you know, this whole network of trolls and bots and Pepes and Kekistanis and whatever they all call themselves, it's going to spread and make people uncomfortable. But I don't think that he has as much sway as he's getting credit for. I don't think he has as much influence even as he thinks he does. But I suppose time will tell.
I was perusing the top 50 page on Snopes, and I noticed how many of the top 50, like a couple of them, are actually basically political dirty tricks, things like the fake Antifa manual. It's interesting how those things go together and go together in the Trump campaign, that you guys got like Steve Bannon of the fake news and Roger Stone of the dirty trick, and they just seem to have this natural affinity for one another.
Yeah, isn't that weird? It just goes to show you, you know, well, I could pick any number of salty sounding, you know, proverbs for this, but I guess I'll just go with birds of a feather.
And it sort of goes to how interconnected these things are about sowing confusion and disinformation in one sphere versus another, whether it's in the guise of news or whether it's in the guise of physical documents out there in the world confusing voters and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it also goes to show you, this is something that I think is probably the most offensive thing at all. It's the fact that there are no new ideas, like just recycling the same old, sad crap. Like, they're courting white supremacists. Oh, there's a new one. You know, we've never had anybody court white supremacists before. They're talking about Jewish people, you know, being bad. Oh, great. Nobody in history has ever talked about Jewish people.
Globalists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just all ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and yet it's dangerous for all of that, because people are taking these dog whistles and these keywords literally, and, you know, it translates into not just death threats, but actual assaults. Not very often compared to how much is going out there, how many calls to arms there are, but enough that it's definitely a worrying trend.
I find it fascinating that there are now fake news purveyors who are playing both sides of the fence. So they'll do something like Kellyanne Conway fired, yay, for yay for the Democrats and boo for the Republicans. And then they're reaping the traffic from both sides of the spectrum.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty venal and it's depressing. But yeah, it's interesting how they're doing that. There's also a site, MediaMass, that anytime a celebrity dies, they pick up some of the traffic by doing a fake debunker. So they're like, oh, well, you know, Jerry Lewis, you may be hearing he's dead, but actually it's a fraud. Here's why. And they pick up quite a lot of traffic that way. You know, it's just SEO and being contrarian. But yeah, it's, I mean, God bless.
I had no idea there was money in celebrity death denialism.
It's 2017.
Yeah, every kind of disinformation has been monetized by now.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we get when, well put, you know, this is what we get when disinformation is monetized to the level it is now. It's been democratized. I mean, it's incredible. It used to be disinformation could only come from a certain small number of key players, right? But now the internet has made it possible for everybody to be a disinfo purveyor. So great, I guess.
I have a question about a particular genre of fake news that I've been noticing more and more. It's some crazy story like the KKK mass grave story, and then it shows up in a publication, an online publication with a name that sounds really normal, like the Jackson Telegraph. And if you look at the other stories on the page, there'll be really boring stuff about traffic and local news that you could totally believe would be, you know, look like a credible local newspaper. Is there a name for that genre? It seems to be tripping people up a lot lately.
We just call it fake news. I mean, it doesn't seem to necessarily, well, no, let me backtrack. I've been watching that happen. It seemed to have started with things like Now 8 News and Associated Media News. And it seems to have started, maybe continues, as just a way to make quick money using controversial stories. So far, I haven't been able to see whether or not there's an actual propaganda push behind it that goes beyond, you know, I'm going to put this story out here to upset everybody and get the advertising money. But I haven't seen enough stories coming out of those to be able to figure out whether or not there's, you know, an undercurrent of disinformation propaganda as opposed to just pure financial gain. But yeah, just fake news.
What are social media companies doing to combat the flow of fake news?
Well, not enough, I'd say, but I understand that it's a big undertaking. They are, well, Facebook, we've been working with Facebook for some time now to sort of isolate the fake news purveyors and figure out what stories are real and false and kind of track the patterns. And Facebook has taken my advice and the advice of other people, which is flood it out with real news. You know, if you see a fake news story going around, make sure that you offer the actual version of that story without the disinformation aspects added in, and make sure that that's more readily available than the sort of micro-targeted disinfo that we're seeing. So there's that. But I really think that when it comes to targeted harassment campaigns and targeted smear campaigns, that Facebook and Twitter need to do much more than they are doing, because it's being picked up and magnified by this sort of loosely connected network of bots and trolls, people who are just doing it for fun, people who are doing it for, you know, an end game, people are doing who are doing it because they personally hate whoever's being smeared and targeted. And Facebook and Twitter aren't doing anything to stop that. And I understand, you know, their concerns about free speech, but when that free speech is being used to effectively silence or no platform or censor somebody else, they need to step in. And I don't think they've come to that conclusion yet.
Do you think Twitter should cancel Donald Trump's account?
I have no opinion. There was a point in, you know, that I used to be agnostic politically and very, 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 well, I still am a very sort of defend free speech at all costs type. But I have to say 2017 has changed, or at least temporarily altered, both of these things considerably. So I don't know. I'm still not there yet. So I can't give you an honest answer, yes or no. I'm sorry.
It's such a tough question, where you've got Facebook, that's this, you know, one of the largest publishers and distributors of information in the world, now dabbling in content creation and co-creation, and the head of it is thinking about running for president in 2020, and yet the same company is being tasked with controlling what information we see. How does it strike a good balance?
I don't know. I wish I had the answer to that. I think that in the future, we're probably going to see a lot more separation between social media and news media outlets. I think we're going to see a lot of soul searching when people have calmed down a little bit about the role of business and the role of politics and when the two should meet. And I think we're going to see a lot of soul searching about how to separate out fake news on social media from actual news. I don't think it's going to really necessarily change how journalism works. I think what it's going to do is change how journalists work within social media.
It's a difficult question because people do have a right to be wrong on the internet. I worry that trying to round up fake news will end up discriminating against people who are merely going against consensual reality, as is their right.
That's a big fear of mine too. And that's why I don't believe in censorship. And that's why I don't believe, you know, that's why I keep like going, oh God, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, Twitter should cancel anybody's account, but they've got to do something, right? So it's a difficult, very tricky one, and a very frustrating question that I ask myself a lot. But I really do believe that the model of flooding out fake news and flooding out misinformation with actual verified journalism is going to go a long way.
A hobby horse of mine is making the decisions, editorial decisions within Facebook, more transparent, so that Facebook takes the same kind of accountability that a community newspaper editor might take, that you can write to the editor and the editor will feel some response to write back to you and explain their decision making.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a good idea, but what about when you're getting caught in the middle of these kind of bot, you know, directed flurries? What about when somebody is telling, you know, their friends and their colleagues to start a letter writing campaign to complain? You know, what about when your reporter's getting doxxed and getting death threats? I don't know.
Seb Gorka did that just last week.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking of. You know, it's that kind of thing. When you're a politician, however loosely I'm using the term here, if you're working within politics, I'll put it that way, and you're doxing people and putting their home address out there, I mean, that's not the kind of thing that anybody should have to be responding to, because that's not the kind of thing people should be doing.
No, I mean, we've got, as we saw recently, a bunch of armed Nazis running around.
Yeah. And a bunch of militias and a bunch of sovereign citizens, a bunch of people who are very invested in there not being a government anymore. I mean, a lot of this has been abetted by disinformation techniques and tactics, but a lot of this is just homegrown and we need to address it in this country.
Do you think that the attacks on the news media are taking away a common narrative that we once had, or have we always been contesting the most basic factual things and we just didn't notice?
Oh no, this is new. This is totally new. I mean, it's not new. It's a recycled, regurgitated effort, but within our memories, this is relatively new. I'm not going to deny that there has been misinformation and disinformation in the media. I mean, there have been tons of disinfo campaigns, some of them spearheaded by the United States and directed at the United States, some spearheaded by the U.S. directed at other countries, and some by other countries directed at the United States. I mean, this has all been going on for some time.
What can people do to stop the spread of fake news in their own information consumption to avoid being taken in or avoid sharing things that are questionable?
Donate to news organizations that you like. Make sure you support them. Don't turn off your ad blockers. Make sure that newsrooms, since we're now in this situation in which newsrooms have to rely on advertising money to survive, as opposed to being seen as a public service, which is how historically they were seen until, I believe, the 90s. Donate. Just, share stories. Make sure you support reporters and journalists. We're doing a difficult job that is often dangerous, and we're doing it because we believe in the truth. And please don't forget that. Don't just trust us blindly, but make sure that if you distrust us, it's for a good reason.
Do you feel like your job has become more politicized since Trump came to power? That, a lot of times you're just pointing out basic factual stuff that happened or didn't happen, but do you think it's taken on a more political valence simply to assert these things?
Oh, God, yeah. I went from being a regular journalist, fact checker, to an opposition journalist overnight, and not on purpose. That's how I started to be categorized. And so I'm just pro-truth. I'm not pro anything except let's live in a fact-based world and plan our lives accordingly, not in the world we want it to be, not in the world that other people say it is, but in the world that relies on basic facts as a bedrock. And that has somehow become incredibly politicized. I'm coming out of a smear campaign that has lasted about a week right now. So I can tell you that, we have a long way to go, and I would rather be smeared for basic facts rather than what somebody is saying that I said. But that's where we are. This is what is happening to journalists all over the place now. It's coordinated, and it's exhausting, and it's very frustrating.
What's it like to be in the crosshairs of that kind of campaign, and how did yours get started?
I'm not really sure how everybody got on my Twitter account, but I think that just people were trawling for, those to fight with. And I guess I'm one of them because I do tend to mock disinformation pretty regularly. And what it's like is it's a bunch of people telling you that you suck on the internet. So luckily I'm used to this. I mean, I've been getting it for years because I've been on the internet for a long time as a journalist. And even though it's become more politicized, it's still always been to some degree a lot of people delighting in telling you that you suck. So I think the best way I can describe it is draining. I have been stalked in the past. I've had people, come after me in the past. I've had some pretty scary experiences with people physically coming after me. So I can tell you, by comparison, this is pretty minor, but it's still a big energy suck.
Was the physical stuff here in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had people try to trap me in parking garages. I've had people try to take a swing at me. I've had people come up to me and threaten me in my face, tell me I should be killed, that kind of thing. And I'm 5'3" and 125 pounds. I mean, I'm not exactly the, a hulking, towering broad either. But there you have it. I mean, it's been like this for some time.
Brooke, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And now it's time for recommended reading, a hand-picked selection to deepen your understanding of our current political moment. Today's reading comes from Gabriel Sherman in Vanity Fair. It's about Steve Bannon's much-anticipated return to Breitbart after his stint in the Trump White House. Check our website for the link. A senior Breitbart staffer told Sherman that if Trump doesn't govern the way Bannon wants, Breitbart News will help Paul Ryan rally the Republican troops for impeachment. That's it for recommended reading. Breach is produced by Nora Hurley for Rewire Radio. Our executive producer is Mark Folletti. Our theme music is Dark Alliance, performed by Darcy James Argue's Secret Society. And I'm your host, Lindsay Beierstein. Tweet your suggestions, comments, and questions to @Beierstein, Beierstein, on Twitter. See you next week.